Welcome to Higher Ed, KUT's podcast focusing on issues of higher education, lifelong learning, and exercising the brain. I'm Jennifer Staton with KUT 90.5, Austin's NPR station, talking as always with Dr. Ed Berger, president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. Hello, Ed.
Welcome back, Jennifer.
Well, thank you very much for having me back. We're in the Southwestern University Library Soundstage,
booth.
Yes, yes.
And studios.
Studios.
Southwestern University Studios.
That is a mouthful to say.
Thank you.
Said it better than I could have.
Thank you very much. I'm a professional. You're listening to KUT, Georgetown.
So, hey, we kind of flipped roles there, didn't we? You took my role. And that's very I'm glad you said that, because we're going to be talking eventually today about flipped classrooms, where things are kind of flipped. But really, that's just a tiny portion of a much bigger subject, which is inquiry-based learning.
Yeah.
Right? IBL. What does that mean?
Some people call it IBL, inquiry-based learning. It's been around for a very, very long time. And it basically is a philosophy, a pedagogy, in which the student is in fact the producer of ideas rather than merely the consumer of other ideas. So instead of sitting passively in a classroom and listening to someone pontificate and give a lecture and the students take notes, the students are actively engaged in the discovery of that material in a variety of different ways. In mathematics, for example, you're given a list of challenges or questions or issues, and you answer each one, and each one then guides you and leads you into the next harder question, and the questions begin to build and build and build, and so forth. In mathematics, this is a IBL, inquiry-based learning, is a very popular way of teaching. Many of my books, in fact, are inquiry-based learning books, where, in fact, I'm not actually giving proofs and answers mathematics, but just lists of questions and challenges that will slowly immerse a student to actively discover the material.
Well, and that's such a different model. I mean, the model that many of us kind of grew up with and know is student sits in a desk, notebook or now, you know, laptop or tablet, whatever, to take the notes that are told to them, and then time is up and everyone leaves.
But this is a life-changing way of thinking and learning, and also of retaining that material, because if you own it, it is part of you. Whereas if someone just throws it at you, it could easily bounce off. And at Southwestern, we received a very prestigious grant from the Howard Hughes Medical Institute, over $1 million grant, to redo our entire curriculum so that every single student that engages in the natural sciences and math and computer science will have that experiential learning where they, in fact, are the discoverer of ideas.
Right. So we talked about flipping roles before, and I've heard about kind of the flipped classroom idea. Is that this?
Yeah, that's a way of delivering this, in fact. And in fact, you know, I have been thinking about this for the past 15 or 20 years. I think I was one of the first people to actually offer a flipped classroom, although I didn't call it that. This is, you know, I had these videos out back in the mid-1990s. And what it allowed me to do when I was teaching way back, I would be thinking to myself, how can I get students to stop writing? And the way that I came up with was to videotape the lecture, have them outsource it. So I didn't call it the flipped classroom. I didn't coin that phrase. The phrase I used, which never caught on, was inverting the roles of homework and classwork. And my thinking was, instead of doing what they do in the classroom, have them do that at home. Let them watch a lecture, get some fact or see a procedure, and then in class have them discover, do, enhance, and actively engage. And so the flipped classroom is a way of offering a more engaged experience, which feeds into the inquiry-based learning.
So let's just kind of walk through an example of that. So let's take math, your area. So in that approach then, so the students would be in class working on math questions, trying to sort of solve those?
We met once a week, by the way, for 3 hours. Can you imagine how much fun it would be? Because I have a day job as president.
Oh.
This was a Monday nights from 7:30 to 10:30 at night. It was like happy hour, but with calculus instead of drinks. And what they did was, throughout the rest of the week, they would watch some of these videos and they would answer some questions. And then when we get together for 3 hours, it wasn't me lecturing. It was me asking them questions, and they were figuring things out, making discoveries, and moving calculus forward on their own.
So this seems like it would work really well for something like calculus or for math or any other topic or subject where there's sort of maybe discrete questions that have a particular answer you're trying to work for. Does it work for history or does it work for English?
Of course. In fact, I would argue that in the humanities is where this was first founded. It was Socrates, for heaven's sakes, who taught by just asking people questions. So, of course, every discipline, and I would argue any direction of human thought, can be engaged with one's mind through this approach, of course. It's just an interactive way of dealing with whatever the issue is.
Is it hard to get students and faculty to kind of change course and do this? Because as we know and have talked about, this is unlearning some old habits.
Exactly.
And relearning kind of, or learning a new way to approach all of this.
And you hit upon the right word. It's all unlearning. There's an expectation. Inquiry-based learning sometimes is very distressing for students, and they get even upset because if it's not explained why we're doing this and what they're going to get out of the experience and how richer the experience is, sometimes their attitude is the following. Well, why is the teacher here if all the teacher's going to do is sit in the back of the room and watch us present stuff and never teach us anything? They're not even doing their job. Well, that's an example where, in fact, the instructor did not clearly articulate the point of this different way of engaging in a learning process, in a learning environment. Their job is to clearly say, this is how the course is going to be. It's very unusual from what you saw in high school and middle school, although now some high school and middle schools are using this approach. But the point is, here's what you're going to get out of it. You're going to become an independent thinker. You're going to become a creative thinker. You're going to become a problem solver. You're going to become someone who's going to actually grow beyond the subject itself. And it's going to be a major investment, and you're going to do a lot of the work. But I, as the instructor, am going to be there doing lots of work with you, but behind the scenes. And they have to understand that, so that frustration is mitigated.
So you said that sometimes students find this approach distressing. Can I tell you what I find distressing?
Oh, I hope it's not me.
No, it's last week's puzzler.
Oh, that was great.
The fishing pole on the bus.
Chris's fishing pole,
yes.
Day at the Southwestern?
I need the solution to that because I...
Let me remind our listeners what the question was. So Chris is an incoming first-year student at Southwestern. She shipped everything else to her residence hall, but all she has left to bring, which she must bring, is her most valuable thing, which is her 5-foot fishing pole. She gets on the bus to go to Southwestern in Georgetown, Texas, and the bus driver has to report that there's a policy that, in fact, objects longer than 4 feet are not allowed on the bus. So instead of being upset and remorse, she immediately, cheerfully gets off the bus, goes into a store, comes out, goes back on the bus with the fishing pole, the same bus driver, same bus. The bus driver says, oh, welcome back. Well, great. Welcome on. And she has brought the fishing pole on. She never bent it. She never broke it. And the question is, how'd she get them?
Is it a retractable fishing pole?
No, but that's a great guess. That's a great guess because, no, but it's not retractable.
Well, the fact that you can't manipulate the pole, you can't saw
Correct.
It. So I
– Correct.
What – I'm stumped. You're going to have to –
Objects longer than 4 feet are not allowed on the bus, and the fishing pole is 5 feet. Even those numbers 4 and 5, if you remember high school math, that should ring as a pair from a very famous triple because what she did – was going to a store and she bought a box. And the length of the box was 4 foot by 3 foot. It's a 4 foot by 3 foot box, which is allowed because they allowed things up to length of 4 feet. And the diagonal of a 4 foot by 3 foot box, by the old Pythagorean theorem, it's a 3, 4, 5 right triangle because 3 squared plus 4 squared is 9 plus 16, which is 25, which is 5 squared. So she puts the fishing pole along the diagonal of this 4 foot by 3 foot box, but this is an object that is not longer than 4 feet, and therefore it's on the bus.
I just had a 9th grade geometry flashback.
And it was so pleasant that you're laughing and gurgling with delight.
Well,
thank you for showing math is fun. Isn't that a great one? I love that one.
That's a very cool one.
Looking at things in a different way.
Yes.
A length can become a diagonal.
Kind of like sort of looking at a classroom, the learning experience in a different way, which is what inquiry-based learning sounds like.
It's exactly what it is.
So, you know, you were talking about how students might find this distressing or it takes some adjustment. So walk us through some nuts and bolts. For example, from your calculus class, are there still tests? How does it sort of – what are the points of commonality with maybe styles or parts of a classroom experience that are a little more traditional?
Some points are in common. Some points are new. The way it worked was, again, I only met with them once a week. And so throughout the week, every single day except Sunday, they had something due, which was unusual. So – and it alternated between online work. So we used one of my virtual textbooks through Thinkwell, which is also another Austin company, thinkwell.com. And they watched the videos there, and then they had online assessment right there and then after they watched the video. So that was all done online. It was either they got it right or wrong. There's no partial credit. So every other day they were doing that. That was Saturday and Monday and Wednesday. I can't do the days. Anyway, so it's every other day.
Okay.
And then on the other days, they would turn in written homework, which is very traditional. So challenges that were calculus, mathematical challenges, where they had to show their work, they had to show their thinking, they had to show their process, and those were graded, not just for the correctness, but also the work involved. They also had essays they had to write because, as you know, and we've talked about this, I'm always front and center is teaching thinking beyond the subject. So they had to use the thinking, their skills they're building in calculus to learn other things. So they had to write these things I called paideia moments, where they took the calculus thinking and applied it to other subjects or other parts of their lives. So they had narratives to write. They had some visualizations where they actually had to draw images to capture a particular abstract concept to make it more real. And then, of course, they had to ask questions. That was part of their assignment. They had to fail. That was part of their grade, effective failure. We talked about that. So they got graded on that and their participation in the class. And then, of course, there were exams. There were actual exams where there were two exams during the semester and then a final exam. And all of that, you stir that together and mix, and that produced the grade.
All right, so we're going to flip a future episode of Higher Ed.
You're and I get to interview
host,
you?
You get, yeah, we're gonna change roles sometime in the future.
Wait a minute, can I do Morning Edition too?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you, Ed, for helping us keep our brain sharp. Dr. Ed Berger is president of Southwestern University in Georgetown. You can find out more at southwestern.edu and keep your brain busy by keeping up with the news and other episodes of Higher Ed at KUT.org. I'm Jennifer Staton with KUT News.